Welcome to the Pro-Life Hour, hosted by Father Tom Lynch and other board members of Priests for Life Canada. Join us as we explore and become involved in pro-life issues and encourage priests and all Catholics to fight the culture of death. Follow us on our journey as we work to support, inform, and empower Catholics to build a culture of life.
Good morning, everyone. This is Father Tom Lynch. I'm the National Director of Priests for Life Canada, and I'll be your host for the Pro-Life Hour today. And I'm joined today, on many days, by Father John Lemire, our co-host, and he is as well the Chairman of Priests for Life Canada. We'll have with us today our special guest, Stephen Woodworth, a Member of Parliament who has recently introduced a motion to initiate a study on the whole term human being. Welcome, Stephen.
Hello.
We'll more formally introduce you just in a few moments.
Sure.
Priests for Life Canada will be hosting the Pro-Life Hour on a monthly basis, airing in Southern Ontario on the first Tuesday of each month from 1 to 2 p.m. on Radio Teopoly, that's AM 530, and it's on the web at www.teopoly.com, T-E-O-P-O-L-I.com, and it's repeated randomly thereafter. We'd like to thank Radio Teopoly for providing us this opportunity to bring you the pro-life message from a Catholic perspective. Monthly programs will also be available on our website shortly following the first airing. Just go to www.priestsforlifecanada, that's one word, priestsforlifecanada.com at your own convenience and listen in, or you can call us at 1-888-300-2007, that's 1-888-300-2007 for further information. Most of our sessions are also available on CD for those who are unable to access the Internet or who have problems downloading larger files. Just give us a call and we'll send you a copy free of charge. So let's begin with a prayer. Lord God, I thank you today for the gift of my life and the lives of all my sisters and brothers. I know there is nothing that destroys more lives than abortion, yet I rejoice that you have conquered death by the resurrection of your Son. I am ready to do my part today in ending abortion, and today I commit myself never to be silent, never to be passive, never to be forgetful of the preborn. I commit myself to be active in the pro-life movement and never to stop defending life until all my sisters and brothers are protected and Canada once again becomes a nation which respects life from conception to natural death, not just for some, but for all, through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Amen.
Well, as already mentioned today, our special guest is Stephen Woodworth. Now a little bit about Stephen. He's represented the voters in Kitchener Centre since being elected as their MP in 2008. And in addition to serving on the House of Commons Justice and Environment Committees, Stephen makes it a point to be accessible to his constituents by attending hundreds of community events since he was elected. I bet, Stephen, you never knew there were so many events.
That's true. Ours are a little more rigorous than I ever thought.
Yeah. Prior to being elected, Stephen practiced law in Kitchener for almost 30 years. Before completing his law degree in 1977, he attended Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo. And over the years, he's had the privilege of assisting many KW area organizations as a board member or advisor. He was elected a school trustee in Kitchener in 94, 97, and 2000, served on the board of Big Brothers, volunteered regularly with the Knights of Columbus, and has been a lector at his church since 1967. He met his wife Sharon at law school, the University of Western Ontario, and they were married in 76 and have been blessed with three wonderful children, Nathan, Adam, and Laura. And they live in Kitchener, where Stephen was born and raised. So, Stephen, as a politician, your career path is somewhat different than your past involvements. Can you tell us what prompted you to enter the political arena?
Sure. And actually, it's all of a piece. When I was very young, I found myself being frequently asked to help with various community events and undertakings, whether it was mowing the lawn at the local convent or picking up my friend's paper routes when they were on vacation or being involved with junior achievement or other youth groups. And it didn't take me too long to realize that there was a real calling for me in the general area of community service. And quite frankly, I knew at an early age that politics was one of the highest forms of community service. And so I went to law school in order to train myself for that work. Mm-hmm. And it seems to have been good training.
Well, there are a lot of lawyers in the House of Commons.
Yeah, there are, although surprisingly, I think there are more teachers and educators
than
lawyers. Yes.
Oh, Well, maybe there's hope for us yet.
But law has given me what I consider to be some real advantages in the House of Commons, and I find I don't have as much difficulty questioning witnesses. I can read a brief and understand it fairly quickly, and for the most part, I find myself sufficiently articulate to handle the job.
Why federal rather than provincial?
That's a harder question to answer. I suppose I can only say generally that the specific political issues that concerned me were federal. And there were really three that were important to me from an early time. One of them was national unity. I feel that we have been living on a razor's edge in a way since 1976 when René Lévesque was elected the first separatist premier in Canada, and we have such a gift to make to the world of our unity in diversity that it would be a terrible shame if Canada didn't succeed, and that's a national issue. The question of human rights and justice and questions around children before birth is another area that's interested me for a long time and drew me. And the third really has to do with economic success in Canada. All of these issues are national, and I can't say that I've ever been as interested in provincial issues.
They're large issues, but we need people to be able to tackle them and tackle them well. You, by the way, we noticed that your margin of victory was substantially more in the 2011 election, and congratulations on
that. Thank you very much. I appreciate the voters' confidence, and I know that even still, when one is elected, you have to remember that not everyone voted for you.
No.
Not everyone will vote for you, but you still represent everyone, and I make it a point, whether or not I agree with people, to represent their views in Ottawa.
Well, only dictators get 100%.
Exactly.
I certainly think your accessibility, your constituents, and to others, Stephen, is a tribute to that, and your availability to meet with people and in your writing, and has been a great source of building those bridges for people.
Thank you. Yep.
Maybe you could just share a little bit with our listeners what it was like to be in the House the first day. It's something that's a very unique privilege for people.
It is, and I must admit that I still have a fairly, I guess, respectful view of the House, although when you actually see what goes on in the chamber, you know, it's easy to lose respect. But I regard the House of Commons as being a very solemn and, in a way, sacred place. You will rarely, if ever, see me heckling anyone who's speaking, because I think that the place of the House of Commons is, in fact, to let people speak and be heard. I do rise and cheer on my colleagues when they make good points, and every once in a long while, I must admit, I lose complete control if I hear somebody saying something very outrageous, but very, very rarely. Most often I think that I want to approach the chamber of the House of Commons as a respectful and solemn place where important issues are discussed. And I hope that shows in my demeanor. You never know who's watching when you're sitting there.
Well, especially when it's on television.
Exactly.
Perhaps we can get down to one of the main reasons that we have you with us today. In the midst of your busy schedule, it's really great that you've been able to put aside this time for us. Most of us are aware that for the past 40-plus years in Canada, there's been virtually no recognition of the child before birth during that time that she's in her mother's womb. Now, something that most of us don't know and that you've unearthed is that for the past 400 years, the preborn child or child before birth hasn't been recognized as a human being. So on February 7th of this year, you had the opportunity to enter into the order papers in Parliament, a motion to study the definition of a human being. I wonder if you could give us a summary of what that would be.
Sure. And let me start with my motion, and then hopefully we'll have a chance to discuss the history and the background of it afterward. We have in our criminal code a subsection 223, paragraph 1, which is actually a definition of human being. very odd to read it when you see it in black and white on paper. And it essentially says that a child becomes a human being only at the moment of complete birth. And what I'm requesting Parliament to do is to form a special committee to examine 21st century medical evidence on this point, whether or not a child is in fact only a human being at the moment of complete birth, or may in fact be a human being before complete birth, and what is the preponderance of medical evidence. What are the legal impact and consequences of that rule on the fundamental human rights of a child before the moment of complete birth? And I've asked the committee to simply examine those issues and then report back to Parliament within 10 months on the options that might be available to Parliament to deal with that. I've been very careful not to insert my own views into it, because what I really want is an open-ended and honest dialogue of all points of view and an examination of the evidence so that the result can be reported back to Parliament.
What sort of evidence would you like this committee to examine?
I think it begins with descriptive scientific evidence based on 21st century techniques and information about the development of a child prior to the moment of complete birth. I think most Canadians know intuitively that there is no magical event that happens when the child's little toe pops out the birth canal, which transforms a child from non-human into human. I think most Canadians know intuitively that a child is human long before that, and we have ways in the 21st century of actually describing a child's development somewhat minutely, including a variety of factors such as neuroscientifically, the operation of the brain, and we can talk about the functioning of organs, the fact that at a certain point a child does have his or her own independent blood type, that is, independent of the blood type of the mother, and other descriptive features which would help inform Parliament about the question of whether or not a child is a human being prior to the moment the little toe pops out the birth canal. And interestingly, this is something that was suggested by Madam Justice Bertha Wilson when she wrote the Morgenthaler decision in 1988. So it isn't an exclusively pro-life point of view, or as sometimes I'm accused of, it's not an exclusively male point of view. It's one that's based on laws which are truthful and just.
Can you elaborate on what the gist, or perhaps the direction of the Supreme Court Justice Bertha Wilson's idea was?
Sure. Let me see if I can find the specific quote. If not, I'll just give it to you from memory. What she said was that the precise point in the development of the fetus at which the state's interest in its protection becomes compelling, I leave to the informed judgment of the legislature, which is in a position to receive guidance on the subject from all relevant disciplines. She went on to say, it seems to me, however, that it might fall somewhere in the second trimester. So her idea there is twofold. First, that it is the job of Parliament to come to grips with this question and to make a decision. And secondly, that Parliament can inform itself from the relevant disciplines, by which I'm sure she would have included or meant medical disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Father John?
Well, Stephen, I think that what you're trying to do by your motion is really to follow up then on that Supreme Court decision of 1988. And I don't think a lot of people have made those connections to that. Has that been your experience so far in terms of reaction to your private member's motion?
Well, yeah, interestingly, there are people on all sides of these issues who would like to talk about everything except what I'm talking about. Even those who support what I'm doing don't really always understand that I'm talking about a very specific issue of whether or not our law should ever say that someone we know to be human being is not a human being. And certainly those who don't agree with what I'm doing would like to talk about anything except that also. So it's very important for me to make sure that people are aware that even that this law exists, 79% of Canadians think that we do recognize and protect children at least in the third trimester of their development before birth. 79% of Canadians think we already have a law which recognizes the interests of children in the third trimester. So the very first thing that I have to do is make sure that people understand, no, we don't. We have a 400-year-old law that says that children are not human beings until complete birth. And once people are aware of that, I think they begin to understand that that's not really accurate or honest, and indeed not just.
So maybe that might be a good starting point for us to kind of look back. 400 years is a long time for something not to get updated, especially with all the advancements in medicine and in technology today. Why do you think that there's been that large gap on this issue?
Well, in the first place, you have to understand that there were two co-equal legal principles in this area for many, many years. One was the principle that a child is not to be considered a human being until the moment of complete birth. And obviously, 400 years ago, when the great advances of medicine were leeches and bloodletting, and nothing was known about the development of a child, you can understand why they would be a little cautious about saying whether a child was a human being before complete birth. But the other half of this legal equation was a law that said even though we will not consider a child to be a human being, we do recognize that the child's life has value, and therefore we will make it an offense of some sort to take the child's life, even though the child isn't human. And that was what was known as our abortion law. That second part of our law was modified by the government in the 70s and 80s, and then ultimately thrown out by Justice Wilson and others for a variety of reasons. What they didn't do, though, at that time was they didn't say, whoops, now that we've thrown out any protection, any penalties, any offense for taking a child's life, we still have a law in the books that says a child isn't a human being, and that's not really correct. They left that part of the law untouched, and they said Parliament should do it. Parliament had a try at it and actually passed a law in 1991. That is, the House of Commons passed it. It went to the Senate, and it was a tie vote in our unelected, undemocratic Senate, which was resolved by the Speaker of the Senate, as he had to do, mm-hmm. against the legislation. And since that time, for a variety of political reasons, Parliament has been unwilling to take up the inquiry again.
Maybe you could explain a little bit, though, about how private members' bills actually do work and how you were able to bring that motion forward for our listeners.
Sure. It's quite interesting, actually, at least for me as a parliamentarian. Every member of Parliament has the right to introduce as many proposals as he or she would like, as motions or as bills. However, one has only the right to take one proposal through to a vote.
In each parliament?
Yes. Well, in each rotation anyway. Mm-hmm. And we go in rotation. There are 308 members of parliament, so that at the beginning of parliament, there's kind of an electronic lottery which is held that determines your place in the rotation. I suppose if we got through all 308 members before Parliament's term ended, then they'd start again at the beginning. But I think likely it will take 4 years of this Parliament to go through all 308. In the last Parliament, which was a minority, I was number 243 and consequently had no hope of being reached in the usual lifetime of a minority Parliament. And so I could propose whatever I wanted, but nothing would be carried forward to a vote. I don't really believe in making proposals without a purpose, so I didn't propose anything. In this parliament, I'm number 42, and so my opportunity to present and forward something to a vote came up much earlier, and indeed this month, February of 2012. I can choose either to propose a motion or I can choose to propose a piece of legislation. And because my commitment here is to simply promote a healthy, respectful dialogue, I have chosen a motion. I'm not proposing a bill or legislation which would provide the answer to these questions. I'm only asking the question in my motion and requesting a study of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I can go on. I can tell you the process.
Maybe you could just,
sure,
if you could tell us the process, because it's not something that most people are cognizant of.
Right, absolutely. So having filed the motion, I'm now on the list and waiting, and there will be a total of only 2 hours of debate on my motion. It's really kind of slim when you think about it,
yeah,
or anything important, but 2 hours of debate split into separate hours. So at this point, the estimate now is that around the end of March or the beginning of April, there will be 1 hour of debate on my motion, and then it'll drop to the bottom again after that of the current list, which is about 30 or 40 items, and then after an appropriate period, it'll rise to the top again, and probably sometime in early June, the second hour of debate will occur. Following that, it will be put to a vote, and that may be in June, or at this point is looking like there's a chance it might even get put off until September. Mm-hmm. So that'll be when the test occurs, is when the vote is on the floor of the House, and that's when I hope that a majority of members of Parliament will say, look, we cannot accept any law whatsoever which says that some human beings are not human. And therefore, we will study this and see what options we can come up with.
Is that, assuming that it does get passed, and it is the case that, honestly, few private members' bills get passed, eh?
True, that's very true.
But if it does get passed, is it perhaps going to be seen as something which would upset the apple cart in terms of the non-discussion of abortion in Parliament? Because anything that seems to even touch upon the broad area is jumped upon by pro-abortion advocates.
Yeah, the difficulty is to make people understand that abortion doesn't necessarily need to be justified only on the basis of misrepresenting whether or not a child is a human being. You know, I think, quite frankly, you could have a discussion about abortion even while recognizing that the child involved is a real human being. And it becomes then possible to argue or debate how to weigh the rights of a child against the rights of a mother and so on and such forth. I don't think, though, that even if you had to pretend that a child was not a human being in order to justify abortion, I don't think the end of justifying abortion would justify the means of pretending that someone is not a human being. And so that's the dilemma. Does the end ever justify the means of ignoring the humanity of any human being? I don't think so, and I hope the majority of parliamentarians will agree with me about that. And if we then conclude that a child really is a human being before the moment of complete birth, we could go on to have other discussions about abortion. But actually, that's not the discussion that I'm raising directly.
Right.
I'm raising the simple question of whether a child is a human being before birth.
Perhaps we can just leave it there and we'll just take a short musical break.
Sure.
And come back immediately afterwards. This is by Carl Kohlhaas, Give Me a Chance. Carl Kohlhaas, Give Me a Chance. And that was Carl Kohlhaas with his rendition of Give Me a Chance. I wonder, Stephen, if we could look at the third part, shall we say, of your hopeful setting up of a committee and to really review the whole idea of the humanity of the child before birth. What might be the legal impact and the consequences of examining this on the fundamental human rights of a child before the moment of complete birth, to use your your language?
Well, I guess that you have to start with the question of what conclusion do we reach? And I'm going to assume that the most likely conclusion is that a child is, in fact, a human being before the moment of complete birth. And there are clearly differences of opinion about even that. You know, for example, it's true that a child's lungs do not inflate until the moment of birth. Well, do you require inflated or functioning lungs in order to be considered a human being? I don't think so, but perhaps someone does. And so we would need to consider the evidence and in some form or fashion assess it. If we conclude that a child is not a human being until the moment of complete birth, that pretty much ends the discussion. So even Article 6 of the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, for example, which says that everyone has the right everywhere to be considered a person, even that wouldn't apply, I don't think, if you were not a human being. On the other hand, if we were to conclude that a child is a human being before the moment of complete birth, then Article 6 of the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights would apply, and a child would be entitled to be considered to be a person and have all the rights of a person, including those rights that are guaranteed to everyone by our Charter of Rights and Freedoms. At the moment, judges have said, no, we cannot apply the charter rights to a child before birth because Section 223 says a child is not a human being, and in order to change that, Parliament has to have a look at it. So if Parliament had a look at it and concluded that a child was a human being, then the Charter of Rights and Freedoms would become accessible to children before birth. Now, you can see that as a result, there are a variety of things that Parliament could report back as options, one of them being to leave the existing law as is, to continue to say in Canadian law that children are not human beings until the moment of complete birth, even if medically they are, or if we think the medical evidence is insufficient. Secondly, we could amend Section 223 in some form or fashion. One could amend it to say that a child is a human being but not a person, for example. I think that would
offend. How likely would that be?
Well, I think there are people who would love to do it. It seems to be actually the position of those who have been most vocal in opposing me, that fine, we don't care if a child is a human being or not. They're just not, even if they're human, they're not persons, whatever that means. I think that would offend the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and it would offend common sense. So I would hope it's not too likely, but it's certainly an argument that's forcefully pushed. Or Parliament could decide, well, we've considered the evidence, and we do not think that genetic humanity is sufficient to call someone a human being, but we feel that a functioning brain is sufficient to recognize someone as a human being, and we will amend Section 223 accordingly. Or we could simply replace Section 223 altogether with some other formulation dealing with the rights of children before birth. So it's a wide open book, and I left it that way intentionally because truly my desire is to let people examine the evidence and reach some conclusions before we try to have the solution take shape.
Mm-hmm. Father John?
Even I think that some of our listeners might be a little bit surprised to hear that there would be a distinction between the words human being and person.
Yes. I agree.
And I think most Canadians would think that a human being is a person and a person is a human being. Can you in a very simple way try to kind of explain what the legal difference of those terms are?
Well, in a way, I'm the wrong person to ask because I don't accept that myself. So I better to ask someone who believes it. But I'm going to tell you as nearly as I can what insight I have into the distinction that's being made. And it is that that the law should not consider inalienable rights so much as interests and gifted rights, so that it's a way of saying that that just because you're human doesn't mean you have any inalienable rights, but rather you have only those rights that we as a society choose to give you or recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And I may not be doing that justice because I really don't swallow that. You know, I do believe that there are inalienable rights that every human being should be entitled to, and I believe that international law supports that view in Article 6, as I've
certainly
already mentioned.
Yeah, I would think that that would be going against the growing body of international law, wouldn't it, since the Declaration, International Declaration on Human Rights?
I think it goes against the growing body of our legal history for the last 400 years. Mm-hmm. You know, if you and I had been alive in the 1850s in the United States, when the United States Supreme Court, 9 learned and well-educated, civilized men, declared that blacks were not persons for the purposes of American law, I hope we would have stuck our hand up and said that's wrong. Or in the early 20th century, when our Canadian Supreme Court declared that women were not persons for all purposes of Canadian law, let's hope we would have stuck our hand up and said no, that's wrong. And in the same way, if we conclude that children are really human beings before the moment of complete birth, I hope we would stick up our hands and say that any law which says they are not persons for legal purposes is wrong. Yet this seems to be the argument which is thrown at me most by those who are opposing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. When we're talking about this proposed committee, how would this committee be composed?
It would be composed in the same way as any other parliamentary committee, and that is the membership would be proportionate on a partisan basis to the partisan representation in the House of Commons. So X percent of the members of Parliament are Conservative, X percent are NDP, X percent are Liberals, and the same percentage would apply to the 12 members of the committee. The House leaders of each party would be entitled to select who sits on the committee, just as they select who sits on every committee from their party. And then a chair would be appointed by the committee members, and the committee would decide the scope of its study. So in some respects, I'm counting on the House leaders of the parties and on the committee members to approach this issue in good spirit and honestly. If they wanted to, they could give it pretty short shrift.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't control that. I can only present the issue and try to help them with appropriate witnesses and see if they take it up.
Theoretically, Stephen, would that mean that you might not be a member on that committee then?
No, I wouldn't expect to be, actually, because it's my motion. It would almost be a kind of conflict of interest. But I would hope that the committee would hear from me and consult me, as they usually do, any committee that deals with a matter of private members' business.
When one looks at that, I mean, there is a the possibility that the recommendations would result in an imperfect ruling regarding the child before birth.
That's true, and that's democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we come to Parliament as fallible human beings, and we put our fallibilities together and hope we come up with the best outcome, but you're quite correct. There is no guarantee of perfect justice, and there is always that risk, and the question you have to ask yourself is the question many great people have asked themselves, you know, democracy, for all its flaws, is still the best system we have. What is the alternative?
Right. Perhaps we can leave it there for just a bit, and we're going to have another musical break. And this is by Margot B. Smith, Precious Unborn Child by Margot Smith. And that was Precious Unborn Child by Margot Smith. What kind of pushback, Stephen, would you say you've had when you since you proposed this?
Well, I get a lot of emails and letters, although to tell you the truth, probably even with this initiative, I still get fewer emails than I do on the CBC. So, and they're probably running about 2-1 in favor of what I'm doing, I'm happy to say. What I find in most of the cases of the people who are not in agreement with what I'm doing is that they want to talk about just about everything except the point I'm raising, which is that we should never accept a law that says that any human being is not human. So there's a variety of other distractive issues that people raise, and most of the time I refuse to get drawn into them.
Mm-hmm. Father John?
In terms of the reaction from your colleagues in the House, has there been much discussion, Stephen, about the motion in the corridors, in other settings like that?
Yeah, I do from time to time raise it with people, although I haven't yet gotten into talking to many opposition members about it. But we do have 308 members of Parliament, and for the most part, in principle, we all have a free vote on private members' business. I don't know for sure if that rule will be adhered to in relation to my motion, but I'm hoping it will. And so I don't think that there are too many people, if any, of my colleagues who have approached me directly with any opposition in principle to what I'm doing. There have been some opposition members who have risen in question period to voice their objections to it and ask what the government wants to do with me. But in terms of conversations that I've had personally, most of the people that I speak to understand what I'm doing. They may say they don't agree, but it's always a good conversation. In fact, most of them say they do support what I'm doing.
So in terms of the response that the government has given, at least in the House, can you sum up for our listeners what that reaction's been like?
Well, the government has issued numerous public statements to say that the government doesn't intend to reopen the issue of abortion and that private members' motions are dealt with according to the rules of the House. And that's as far as the government has spoken publicly. And I accept both of those statements, by the way.
Right. In terms of the broader community then and their reaction, have you received support from any of the various pro-life organizations?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I think that they're all supportive, and I think that they understand that although I am not dealing directly with the issue of abortion, the question of whether or not a child is a human being is quite relevant to the question of abortion. And I think for the most part, the pro-life groups operate on the basis that they do accept that a child is a human being before the moment of birth. By the way, I don't make up that language. You know, I've had some pro-abortion people say to me, you're making that up. You know, you're calling this person a child or this fetus a child just to make it sound more cuddly. But actually, that is the language that Section 223 uses. In Canada, under our law, under Section 223, one is actually a child before one becomes a human being.
I think it's interesting that, you know, speaking from a bioethical background too, that this has other implications about treatment before
yes.
birth too.
Oh, absolutely. Not only treatment before birth, but treatment of people after birth. You know, if we can say without any cogent evidence or sound principle that a child is not a human being 2 minutes before birth, then we can probably also say that someone who's fallen into a coma for 24 hours is not a human being either.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps a child is not a human being until they've reached the age of reason. Or perhaps someone who is born with Down syndrome is not a human being, or someone who is hydrocephalic is not a human being. This issue of how we decide who is a human being is actually much more fundamental even than the abortion question. And do we really want a Canada where any group or person with enough power can rig the law to say that anyone who is a human being isn't. I don't think that's the kind of Canada I want. I think we want a Canada where laws honestly represent that. I hope most people agree with me.
What can our listeners do to support your efforts?
Well, they can, first of all, email or write their member of parliament and the government. I always prefer people to do both, actually. A written paper document is sometimes much more effective than just an email. There is a petition which has been developed, and I believe there is a link to that petition on my website now.
Right.
My website is www.stephenwoodworth.ca, and indeed there should be a link on my website to the Elections Canada vehicle for telling people who their member of parliament is and what the address is. You just put your postal code in and it'll come up. So I think the job that I have to ask people to do is to, as forcefully as possible, reach as many members of parliament as possible. In fact, you don't even have to confine yourself to your own member of parliament.
Right.
Send something to every member of parliament and let them know that you agree that Section 223, our 400-year-old definition of human being, should be examined in the light of 21st century knowledge and medical understanding.
Well, we'll certainly put a link up on our website as well, and we'll put that link in the hard copy newsletters that many of our supporters get as well, because I think it's important to be able to recognize how you can be able to effect changes in the law and effect changes in public policy in that regard. It's, a lot of people feel they can't do anything, and it's important to recognize that it's not just their own MPs or just yourself, but to be able to speak to the MPs in general. And many of our people do want to be able to try to do something, so I think it's a good thing to be able to push forward that. We'll also have the petition as well up on our website, and we'll put out that information as well.
Very good. I'm quite convinced that if the 72% of Canadians that surveys tell us would like to have a law providing some protection for children before birth, if those 72% of Canadians made their voices heard by parliamentarians, we'd have a law pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But the difficulty is a lot of those 72% don't even know there is no such law right now.
Right.
They think there is.
In the final 2-3 minutes we have, because in an hour show like this, sometimes people don't tap in right at the first, I wonder if you could give a concise summary of your initiative, what you're doing, and where it's going to go.
Sure. There are a couple of very important principles for people to understand. One is that we do have a 400-year-old definition of human being with very important implications, since it denies that children are human beings before the moment of complete birth, and therefore it disentitles them to human rights. And secondly, that we do have in the 21st century a lot of medical and other information that can inform us and can be used to update that law. Thirdly, that it's Parliament's duty. Parliament's really been sort of shirking its duty since 1991, and it's Parliament's duty to update that 400-year-old law with modern principles. So in the end, I want people to understand that that Parliament should not accept any law that says some human beings are not human when they actually are. So if you can talk to your friends and neighbors, this doesn't have to be a heated discussion. It can be discussed in terms of medical knowledge and legal principle in a very reasonable way.
And I also think in terms of people's experience and knowledge themselves. I mean, when you consider the majority of people listening are parents,
yes,
they've already been through this and they know it.
Exactly. Exactly. So draw on your own knowledge of this and let's just try to get laws that are honest and just on this one particular point of Section 223, the Canadian 400-year-old definition of a human being.
Well, thank you very much for that, Stephen. And just a note to our listeners, we will have, as I said earlier, information on our website, or you can phone our number and we'll give you that information as well if you're not so tech savvy. And we'll put it as well in our newsletter about how to be able to support this. Time really is of the essence when it comes to a private member's bill such as Mr. Woodworth's, because you only have a very narrow window and you pretty well have to take that window when you can. So we'd like to be able to try to push that as far as we can in terms of supporting an initiative like this. On a broader basis, we'd like to thank to let our listeners know that membership in the organization of Priests for Life Canada is open to everyone, and to thank you very much for your support. We can be able to give you any information if you want to be able to phone our number, 1-888-300-2007. And I'd like to thank Father John Lemire, the chairman of our board, for joining us today as a co-host. But a very special thank you to Stephen Woodworth, the MP from Kitchener Centre. I know it's an extremely busy time when the House is in session, so we appreciate it very much that you were able to make the time from your busy schedule to be with us. It's never easy being an MP, and the task can be very frustrating. I was a lobbyist for a year, and I tell you, the time away from family is a real sacrifice. So we'd like to thank you, and we'd like to thank all the MPs for making that sacrifice.
And thank you for inviting me.
Let's finish this today's show with a short prayer. Lord God, you have fashioned every man, woman, and child in your own image. Give us, we beg you, a keen eye to recognize that image so that respect for all human life may become truly our way of life. Grant this through Christ our Lord. May God bless you, and we'll see you next month.
Bye.